Hi, and welcome to Shadow Talk's weekly intelligence summary track, where our team of analysts dive into the top threat intelligence stories each week. To read their full findings and analysis, make sure to visit resources.digitalshadows.com. Now here's your host, Harrison Van Riper.
Hello listeners, HVR here back again with another episode of Shadow Talk. We're on the 15th episode of the weekly intelligence summary. It's the week of April 15th. Easter's coming up, tax day is behind us. With me this week, I've got an all Dallas crew. Alex and Christian are here with me now. How's it going, fellas?
Hello, everyone. Good to be back.
Hey, yeah, this is Christian here. It's great to be back for second podcast in a row. Hopefully, I can keep the streak going. Good to be here.
It's a good week so far, I guess. Good week. Everybody survived the weather that we went through this week.
Dallas sure is known for having its crazy weather. But this past week was a little bit of a disappointment. We were promised basketball-sized hail and all sorts of doomsday stuff, but
any.
Nothing happened. No,
I guess maybe some people did, but we didn't down here.
Yeah,
yeah. A friend of mine described it as spiked baseballs, so I even went as far as to park my car in a local parking garage to be careful. But none of that came true.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. All right, so let's just go ahead and jump into it then. Christian, you're going to lead us off this week. Microsoft acknowledged that there was a threat actor that got access to one of their support agent accounts and allowed them to potentially see a whole lot of customer email stuff. Inform me.
Yeah, so Microsoft has reported that user accounts for its email services, which include Outlook, MSN, and Hotmail, were accessed between January 1st and March 28th of this year. The threat actors reportedly gained access to a high-privileged Microsoft customer service user account that allowed them to access information contained in regular user email accounts. The impact of the breach was limited to normal consumer email accounts, so corporate-level accounts were reportedly not affected. The stolen data generally included the subject lines of messages, folder names, and user contacts. Initial reports stated that the contents of emails were not accessible, but this was soon after contradicted as the threat actor reportedly obtained access to some of the account's message body content, which was quite important, obviously. There are unconfirmed reports that the compromised information was used to pivot to target Apple iCloud accounts, which were likely linked to Microsoft email accounts to do things such as disable the activation lock feature on an iPhone, thereby enabling thieves to restore the factory settings on an iPhone, making it easier to sell. So what does this all mean? High privileged accounts are often held by administrators and customer support employees who have extensive access to sensitive data, representing a clear point of failure for an organization. Any threat actor who can gain access to such an account is able to cause disruption across various functions of an organization. This recent example is an example of an attack on users via third party, so in this case Microsoft, and shows that organizations should extend their security audits of supply chain or third-party partners to include examining the access granted to individuals who have access to the sensitive data. Threat actors will continue to target email accounts of users with privileged status, making it vital for organizations to take mitigation steps. In my opinion, the mitigation steps here would be to audit the current access controls of high-privileged accounts and configure group policies to prevent any account becoming a single point of failure. This can be done by assigning only permissions and access required for a role and dividing up privileges for different environments within an organization. So even if a single high privilege user needs multiple accounts to access various environments, there'll be less impact if a single set of those credentials is stolen. And then the second thing is to keep the number of high privileged accounts as low as possible to minimize risk. This one, I think a lot of people will understand that, but it's quite worth noting. So after they're set up, and it just ensured that they're secure to prevent threat actors from attaining access. For example, just require multi-factor authentication and monitor attempts to log in from new locations. And so what's next going forward? Given that the perpetrator obtained the email data of Microsoft users, several outcomes are realistically possible here. So it could almost certainly be used to tailor future phishing emails by referencing names and subjects familiar to a target. So even the messages whose body content was not exposed here could be used in this way, considering how many details can still be obtained through subject lines and sender names. And then for users whose message content was exposed, it's possible that threat actors behind the campaign will either directly monetize any financial information found in the emails or extort victims by threatening to leak sensitive or potentially embarrassing data. And then finally, another possibility is that the threat actor will indirectly monetize the stolen data by selling any useful details on cyber criminal markets or forums.
All right. Well, yeah, something definitely to keep an eye on. Do people still use Hotmail? People still use Hotmail accounts?
Yeah, I'm glad you pointed that out, actually. As I was writing this report, I did notice that, and I thought about not including it. But for those listeners who do use Hotmail, one, maybe reevaluate a couple things going on in your life, and two, just be wary about what might have happened.
So what you're saying is that my AOL email is still fine. It's safe.
Yeah.
Right?
AOL is
okay,
fine.
Okay,
yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Do you have any like free disks with like 1,000 hours on it that you can give me?
I might have a couple in the back of my 96 pickup, but I'll have to go
about
and
your
check.
Supra?
Yeah, my 1996 Toyota Supra.
Okay, cool. Well, yeah, I'm sure everybody's eyes are going to be peeled to see if any of that data pops up online anywhere. Remember, listeners, to read the full intelligence summary, go to resources.digitalshadows.com. Find all kinds of goodies there. In addition to the INTSUM, you can also find all of our blogs there, and that's all really good research and really good stuff. All right, so then moving on to the other highlights for this week. Alex, there was some reporting of the Triton malware attacking a critical infrastructure facility.
Yeah, so after what we saw in December 2017, where we saw the Triton malware being used to target ICS systems, it was then linked to a Russian government-owned technical research institute, and this time we saw some more critical infrastructure being targeted with the Triton malware. It's not sure if these two incidents are linked, but more information is probably going to come out in the next couple of weeks or months.
Okay, yeah, we'll definitely keep an eye on that one. Moving on, Christian, the Hoplite Trojan was attributed to Lazarus Group this week.
Yep, yeah, it was. So this week, researchers released a report on the new Trojan known as Hoplite that's been associated with the North Korea-affiliated Lazarus Group, as we all know so much about. The new variant currently includes 9 malicious files that are capable of installing backdoors and collecting system information. So that includes operating system version, volume information, and system time. 7 of those files contain proxy applications in order to mask traffic between the malware and the remote operators. These malicious proxies are also capable of generating fake TLS connections in which the SSL device may attempt to decrypt files and fail. Depending on the configuration, the attackers could forward the traffic without inspection by the victim, essentially bypassing security policies and infiltrating the system. So it's currently unknown which target sector or geography the malware is targeting, as Hoplite has yet to have been associated with an attack. However, I think many of our listeners will know that Lazarus Group has previously been attributed with financially motivated attacks against financial institutions and cryptocurrency exchanges in order to generate income for the regime. It is also realistically possible that the Trojan has been developed to target a specific sector. For example, the Rutenkba Trojan used by Lazarus Group originally targeted the banking sector, but was repurposed in 2017 to instead target small non-financial organizations with an interest in or affiliation with cryptocurrency. It is possible that Hoplite has been developed for similar purposes or to target organizations that either manage or own cryptocurrency.
Cool. Yeah, every time you mention cryptocurrency, you know my ears perk up. I love my crypto. All right, so back over to you, Alex. A story that's really still developing, even as we're recording right now, but the IT outsourcing company Wipro, their networks experienced some unauthorized access by a threat actor.
So this story has been in the news over the past couple of days, and it fits in nicely with the main article in this INTSUM. So the Indian IT outsourcing company Wipro was reportedly compromised by an as-yet-unknown threat actor who gained unauthorized network access, and then they were then able to target several of Wipro's customers, and they have some pretty high-profile clients. So phishing attacks through their compromised corporate email system could potentially be devastating because those emails might be perceived as legitimate, and they could pivot off into other companies' networks that way as well. So this story looks to be developing over the next couple of days as well, and there's probably going to be more information coming out fairly soon as well.
Cool. Yep, definitely. Thanks for that, Alex. One other highlight that I'll mention this week is that the special counsel Robert Mueller's report into the investigation of the 2016 presidential election was published this week. We're still kind of deep diving into this, and obviously, you know, kind of everybody's got eyes on this. So we might be able to pull out some interesting TTPs from the disinformation perspective of everything that went on. But yeah, we'll see. And that's something that got published this week as well. All right. So looking forward for the next couple of weeks, what can we expect? Alexi, you first.
So we have the Spanish general election coming up on the 28th of April, and we've previously seen some ideologically motivated activity from pro-Catalan threat actors. There will likely be some increased hacktivist activity as that election kind of rounds up.
Cool. And then Christian?
So it's possible that United Nations event on multilateralism, which is going to take place on April 24th, will be targeted by cyber espionage groups, as these kind of events usually are.
Excellent insight there, boys. Good job. All right, well, then that is going to do it for us for this week. Remember, listeners, to go like, subscribe, share, listen, do all that fun stuff. Go to resources.digitalshadows.com to download the full intelligence summary. And like I said earlier, read any blogs that we have. I'm just saying, like, my blogs are on there as well. So this Harrison Van Riper, just search that and then you'll find everything.
Or Christian Rankin.
No, no, not Christian. No, Christian. No, just me. All right, so now we've come to the question of the week.
The ultimate predator or like the ultimate survival animal? Which one, what kind would you be better?
So Alex is supplying the question for this week. If you could combine two animals together, the ultimate predator within the wild jungles, what would it be? If I said something in combination with a shark, would it have to have gills? Or could it breathe?
It could have gills, and it could also have lungs.
Ooh, it could have both. Ooh, that, now that's an ultimate predator. Can survive and breathe underwater. We haven't gotten to yours yet. I'm going to say combination of an elephant and a jaguar. So it's really fast, but also massive. So it can take down anything. And it's a carnivore, so it's gonna meet. It's gonna eat meat.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That's fine.
Yeah. I mean, that's something. It's not the best. You know, just off the top of my head, I think I would have to go with one of them. Has to be a human. I mean, we've just dominated the planet.
That's boring.
So I'm just gonna take the skills that I have as a human to dominate other animals now, and combine it with a gorilla, and just go human gorilla. So. Imagine giving the intelligence of a human to the strength and brute force of a gorilla. So, game over, I win. Do we even want to go to Alex? Or
I feel like that answer is not sufficient because humans and gorillas are so closely related already.
That would be like saying a panther and a puma.
And here goes Christian. Well, the technical difference is between a panther and a puma.
No, just defend your answer. You're not going to beat mine.
All right, what's yours?
Well, Christian, I would like to see your human gorilla hybrid come after a hybrid of an orca and a peregrine falcon.
So what, like a flying killer whale?
Flying killer whale with the killer instincts and the ability to fly at 300 kilometers per hour.
Yeah.
Diving down and immobilize its prey.
Would it be, it could dive underwater?
Yes.
Is it? It's big too. It's like massive, like a killer whale.
Yes.
I'm still gonna say that my animal has the cognitive capacity to build a nuclear warhead. So I think I still win this one.
Well, it would be like, you think half a human intelligence could build a nuclear warhead? I don't think so.
So do you get half the flying ability of a peregrine falcon?
He brings up a valid point. All right. On that titillating note.
And what about combining a human with a cockroach to be able to survive the nuclear fallout? What now?
He's got you on that. But you already made your choice, so you're the orca what is it?
Peregrine falcon.
Peregrine falcon. All right. On that note, we're gonna end it. Thank you, guests. Thank you, listeners. Talk to y'all next week.